Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promoting for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
What if I told you everything you know about the world is wrong?
Dear Lord, what if I told you that all the things I believe to be impossible are in fact very much possible?
Reality is not what you think it is. It is so much more complicated, fascinating, and above all,
Lord, is terrifying.
We're at the fringes of the map.
And there's more than just dragons. In your name I pray. Amen.
You're sitting at the chess table. Both of you get up to leave, or maybe you want to stay to play a match with someone sitting around you. Sitting around you, you have...
This will be really exciting if it's just all games of chess.
I'm personally down for this.
There's Sir John Crown. There is the woman dressed like some sort of adventurer. Like, I don't know. You probably didn't get... You got a little bit of a look at her at a distance, but now that she's sitting down here next to
the... Is the adventurer lady the one with the scar?
No, that's a different woman.
Two ladies, got it.
Although the woman with the scar is also probably nearby, like you could chat to her as well if you wanted to. But yeah, the adventuring woman, or the woman who looks like an adventurer, she's wearing kind of like a busset, a really nice kind of petticoat sort of thing, but she's got kind of like almost a Batman-style belt, which has hanging off it a set of ice axes, and you can see... A little pouch that's got like the Red Cross stamped onto it. You assume that's a medical kit of some sort. And you can see that her, there's a bunch of other like little odds and ends that are just kind of tucked in various different spaces upon her. You can see that she's wearing like really nice lacy sort of gloves, but the palms of them are filthy.
Okay.
What would you like to do? You can smell food coming from the front dining car. The delicious smell of probably fish and chicken.
Boy, who doesn't love being in an enclosed space where fish is being cooked?
Probably not fish. Actually, that's a fair point. Chicken or maybe, I don't know, let's say lamb. They probably
would. It's too late. You already said fish.
All right. You know what? The Crown is a very fancy establishment. Yes, they do have fish. They've figured it out.
Out in the middle of Mexico in 1860, whatever.
There's fish that live inland.
Go on.
The inland, the freshwater salmon, maybe? That's a thing, right?
Yeah.
You know what? It's my world. There's a fish called an unger that lives exclusively in lakes and rivers inland. They're probably serving unger.
I don't think I've ever would have referred to that as being inland. It's still in water. It just tends to be landlocked.
It's also a fish. You know how some fish have those legs or whatever? It's a fish with legs.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. You rock the DM car and I rock back.
I mean, if you want to get annoyingly taxonomically technical,
yeah,
all vertebrates are fish.
Yeah, that's because there's no real proper definition for fish, is there?
And no, it's you just whatever your ancestors are. Like, you're a human, right?
Oh, I see
which
what you're
which makes
saying.
You a primate, which yes. makes you a mammal, which makes you a synapsid, which makes you a chordate, which makes you a fish.
But what about the whole gills thing?
That's our lungs.
All right.
That's why you hiccup.
I hiccup because I'm a fish. That's going to be my newest way of explaining hiccups.
I don't have time to explain it right now.
I believe.
But if you find that kind of thing interesting, it is.
Very good. All right. So you don't have to go to the dining car, but you see that a lot of other people are heading towards the dining car. The crowd that had gathered around you, there was maybe even just like extending a little bit out. There was like a little bit of a, when you finished, a little like a golfer's clap going on. They were all very pleased with the display.
Yeah, who doesn't love a good stalemate?
Well, look, hey, it was a stalemate can be exciting.
Stalemate can be pretty exciting.
I would argue that a stalemate could be the most exciting because right up until the end, it looks like anyone might be able to win.
Well, I bow to Josh's experience here. My my chess playing ended with Star Wars Battle Chess on the computer way back in the day. I said, "Do you smell unger cooking?"
I don't know what that is.
You've never had? My dear boy, you simply must. Come along.
All right.
As you walk towards the dining car, both of you hear probably maybe something really almost cliche like Moonlight Sonata start playing. And if you glance over your shoulder, you see...
Not in 1867, you wouldn't.
Oh, shit. Wouldn't you?
Nah, I'm kidding. I haven't heard when that was written.
It's alternate history, Adam.
It was composed in 1801. So, like, I guess cosmically speaking, it is very recent. Actually, the more I think about it, that's like 60 years old at this point. Anyway, you hear Moonlight Sonata playing and you both turn around, or if you turn around, I should say, you see the man who was in the French military uniform before, you see him playing at the piano.
Is he playing it well?
I mean, he knows how it goes, but you wouldn't, like, this is not a performance people are going to be clapping about. It seems almost like he's practicing, to be honest.
I like that you left that up to chance.
Everything's chance, baby. All right, so you head into the dining car. In the dining car, you see a bunch of the people that you've seen already before. The Indian doctor, Sir John Crown, probably walked like right in front or right behind you as well. You see as well Miguel Zedillo, the conductor for the train. He appears to be walking back and forth, ordering the wait staff around. A bunch of them are going about taking orders from people. You can see just past the door to the kitchen area is slightly ajar, and you can see kitchen hands and stuff working in the front part of the train. You also probably, just for a brief moment, catch a glimpse of... Right past the kitchen area, you can see straight into it is an office space, just like a teeny tiny, maybe the size of like a toilet in a public restroom office space. Absolutely minuscule space, but nonetheless, an office with like a desk and a typewriter.
You clearly don't live in Jersey City because that would be a big office here. If you had one that big in your apartment.
Same. Brooklyn. Yep.
I don't know if you've noticed, but I do live definitely in another country.
What shit?
I know. It's fucked. I know. I play it off so well. Every time either of you are like, "Hey, Adam, you live like 15 minutes away from me. We should hang out." I'm like,
"Why do you think I have this ridiculous accent?" That if there's anyone under 30, that was a reference to the John Cleese was a French guy in a. But anyway, it's not. I don't think that Adam has a terrible French accent.
You do not see Otis here. Otis Bismarck is noticeably absent. Would you like to sit with each other since you're such good friends already? You can see there's a few tables available right now. Would you like to try and find your own table? What do you want to do here?
I think I've latched onto. I've almost taken the priest as an accessory at this point. Like, I have an arm around him, and I'm steering him around, just telling him stuff. So we'll sit at whatever... I want to sit somewhere where people can see me.
Mm-hmm.
Not too far from anyone who is important.
Okay. Yeah, sure.
And with the amount you're talking, I'm actually listening so much I'm barely responding. Because that is something that the Reverend is used to, is listening to people just tell him woes and stories and stuff. So he's just going to be, you know, paying 100% attention.
Well, you find, I would say, I guess maybe the best place then to be seen by everyone is a kind of central table. So you find as close to the center as a table will allow you to be. And I would say that you're sitting with Dr. Singh, Sir John Crown, and one of the women with like the massive... awful looking scar across half of her face.
Right. The one who I shot that wink to or whatever when we were playing.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm glad that I established that Winchell isn't wearing his turban at this point.
Yes.
Like, it was very specifically he was wearing a hat.
When you notice specifically when that woman, I don't know if you learnt her name.
Frida, right?
Yeah, Frida Dietrich. She almost immediately introduces herself. She speaks with a heavy German accent. Frida Dietrich. And she kind of like extends one of her hands for you to kiss it.
I do. And we introduce ourselves as well. I introduce myself.
Mm-hmm.
My dear lady, Winchell W. Edwards, pleasure. And this is my good friend.
Reverend Daniel Mason. Pleasure to meet you.
Reverend, she says.
Yes, ma'am.
She nods, like she's kind of just making it looks like she's making a mental note. You see that she seems to be kind of like assessing you. You get the immediate feeling, it kind of almost, it's got this sensation of kind of being circled by a shark. It feels a little bit like she's trying to work out whether you're a seal or a fellow shark. You're also watching this. You get that Frida is absolutely assessing both of you. You see her eyes briefly glance down at your waist, and it looks like she might be checking for a gun.
Mm-hmm.
She sits down, and when she sits down, she has like a little clutch that she's holding with her. She sets the clutch down on the table, and both of you hear it hits the table with like a solid thunk. The clutch is weighty, and it feels like it's made of something heavy as well.
Well, thank you for gracing us with your presence, my Teutonic Temptress. I hope you're looking forward to some delightful unger, I think is what they're cooking tonight.
I do so enjoy land fish, she says. Tell me, what brings both of you to the clan?
Well, I was making my way down into Mexico, and I was planning on spreading the word of God down here, and well, it turns out that they're already being occupied by other people and do not wish for others to invade their space and try to take away their ways. So I turned myself around. I'm going back up to the States and hopefully do some more repairs after our war and can help people out, you know, at home.
She nods. Oh, and actually she should probably roll to see whether or not she knows you, Edwards.
That's true. I'm a little famous.
You can see her eyes are kind of fixated on you, Edwards. And before you're able to respond with why you're here, she says, I know you.
Ha. Yes, well, this is the price of fame. How embarrassing to have my reputation precede me so. Are you familiar with my work?
You are a medium of some sort?
That is correct. I can pierce through the veil between worlds.
She says, you immediately get the impression that she's kind of unimpressed by that.
I hate that.
You don't think she's a believer?
You're paying attention to her, but you are receiving the same look from the person next to you.
Sir John Crown is almost the opposite. When he hears that, he says, bloody hell, you can see into the spirit world?
Well, nothing so crude as seeing directly, and it's, you know, there's not a direct sensory analog between the living senses of the body and the ability to receive messages from the other side. I would say I'm sensitive to the next plane.
So would you describe it kind of like how... Well, I suppose how you can't describe smell in the form of sight, if you know what I mean. It's kind of the same thing where you cannot describe such a sense in retrospective to other senses.
I rather suspect you're correct in that assessment.
Yeah, yeah.
I've always thought of it as the way when one is dreaming, one will know certain things to be true even without anyone in the dream imparting that knowledge to you. Are you familiar with this?
Yes. It's yes, that makes a lot of sense to me. I understand, yes. Sir John Crown, I don't think we've been properly introduced. I'm a salesman of sorts. Do you do anything like reading?
Oh, well, I am, this is, of course, a trip for pleasure. I suppose I see... I hear. I can feel.
Give me your hands, Sir John Crown.
John Crown gives you his hands.
And like, when I say that, though, I stand up and bump hard against the table on my way up. And like, you know, glasses are knocked over. It's a very dramatic moment.
I stumble to pick up the glass.
I need to cold read this guy as hard as I possibly can right now, Adam.
While you're grabbing for your glass, Reverend, you see Dr. Singh also grabbing for his. Both of you lock eye contact for a brief moment, and you see, similar to Frieda Dietrich, the doctor rolls his eyes a little bit, also unimpressed.
I return the look with a smile and just the eyes widening of like, yup.
Trying to decide if I just want to cold read this guy, although I've made quite a spectacle. Is there any way the ghost that haunts me can help me out here? my old partner from my stage show who met his untimely demise.
All right, you spend a point of willpower to use this ability, but after you spend the point of willpower, you grab Sir John Crown's hands and you. God, what exactly would you like to get out of this? You are actually, without anyone else at this table realizing, because they are all such big skeptics, but you actually tap into Sir John Crown's spiritual history, and you gain access to any ghost related to him. You feel hands upon your shoulder, the hands of, you know who this is. You know this is Clayton Murray, your old partner. He whispers something into your ear. You never quite know what he is whispering into your ear. You just feel like you feel the words almost upon your ear, but you don't register them. And then you see behind Sir Crown, like a stretching silhouette of the ghost that you are contacting. Who would you like to reach out to? Would you like to reach out to a family member?
Yeah, whatever family member has the strongest connection to him.
Okay.
Like whoever he would have had the strongest bond with in life. There must be some connection still after life, and I want to know that person.
You see the silhouette slowly materialize, and then it's in a similar way that Clayton is putting his hands on your shoulders.
Well, with his hands on my shoulders, I go, Clayton, the table, shake the table.
You say this very often. That is not what Clayton does. The table does not shake. Clayton cannot influence the material realm that easily. And you're not 100% sure that Clayton understands what you're even saying. It's very funny, though. I'm assuming you do this every time. And
I'm always hoping it's going to work. The lights, but Clayton, the lights.
You see two hands appear from the silhouette on Sir Crown's shoulders. And the silhouette slowly materializes into a very elderly and wizened-looking woman. She has kind of like a classic Upper English sort of appearance, for lack of a better term, that like classic stiff upper lip sort of look about her. She's dressed very conservatively, and you can see, because she is putting both hands on Sir Crown's shoulders, she has a cane that she has just hanging off her arm, because she obviously can't be physically holding it.
Why have you called for me?
She whispers at you over Sir Crown's head.
Your name. What is your name?
My name is Elizabeth.
Elizabeth. Elizabeth, what message do you have for John?
When you say that, well, he just kind of, it's not cold reading. He just comes out with the name Elizabeth. You see John Crown. Reverend, you see John Crown, who up until this point, this kind of seemed like a fun thing to do. He wasn't taking this very seriously. He was interested, but he wasn't taking it seriously.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
You see his face take on a very dark expression. He snaps his hands back. Edwards, would you like to resist that?
All right,
Coin flip, hell yeah.
No, I let him go.
Edwards, you hear the Elizabeth with her hands on John's shoulders. You hear her say, "He killed." And then she's gone. Your connection to her and to John is severed.
I look him straight in the eye and I say, "I don't know what this means, but Elizabeth says she forgives you."
Oh my God. All right. You don't need to roll a bluff because John Crown is so distracted by how inadvertently on the fucking money you are right now. John Crown, white as a ghost, leaves. He doesn't say anything. He just leaves.
This is why I generally, to Dr. Singh and Miss Dietrich, I say, this is why I rarely contact the other side outside of any of my stage engagements. Here, a listing of which, and I hand each of them a flyer.
Dr. Singh politely, how big's the flyer? Is it big enough to put in a wallet?
Yeah, sure. It's like twice the size of a business card. If you fold it in half, you could tuck it in your...
Sure. Dr. Singh politely puts his in his wallet. Frida sets hers down on the table, and you're not certain she's going to pick it up when you're done here.
If she doesn't pick it up by the time dinner is done, I'm going to take it back because it costs money to make.
All right. So Miguel comes around and he asks if you'd like the fish or the chicken.
Oh, the chicken, please. I can't abide hunger.
I would also go with the chicken, please. Thank you.
Frida and Singh both ask for the fish. They're curious. Neither one of them have... Dietrich has had Unger before, but Singh, he's never been to America before, or to the Americas before. He's excited to try it. It's a fish exclusively found right in this part of the world. It's almost specifically localized in Arizpe, so they must have had to have picked it up while they were going through there. Mm-hmm. It's a very strange phenomenon. Dinner is served. You see a bunch of people are having, like, people are getting a little bit jolly, a little bit merry. People are having drinks. If you casually glance around, Otis is still not here. Obviously, neither is Sir Crown, who has left and does not appear for the rest of the dinner. George Maynard, the marshal, has one of the tables to himself, like he was at the station before you got onto the train. He's sitting in a chair with his big old dirty boots kicked up on the table. He's smoking a big fat cigar and he is drinking profusely. You see that he's getting like a little red in the face and you could tell that he is inebriated. In addition to that, you see that adventurer. There's another woman. She looks quite upper class. If you're listening at all, she speaks with a French accent as well. And then finally, also with the table to himself, he comes in maybe halfway through the dinner and everyone's a little bit hushed as he walks past. But there is a man with a heavy poncho and a massive wide-brimmed sombrero that you had not noticed until this point. He sits down at a table to himself. And when he does so, when food is brought out to him, he hunches over the food and kind of just shovels it, almost like he's afraid someone's going to come in from the side and try to steal it from him.
Ah. Siblings.
Yes. Well, you have a delightful other than that reading, you have a delightful dinner. Would you what would you sort of chat with Singh and Dietrich? Would you be keen to learn anything about them?
Well, you also notice that after that reading, the Reverend got incredibly quiet and not doing the rolling eyes, not doing the big eyes. He has a very sincere look on his face, and he doesn't talk unless he is asked questions. And even so, his responses are short.
I think one of the things that if Edwards doesn't excel in it, he at least believes he does is, his badinage. He's fancies himself a raconteur. So he tries to keep the conversation at the table as lively as he can for as long as people are there. So he's asking about the other people there, telling them anecdotes about how magnificent he is.
Okay, no successes, unfortunately.
All right, well, we've learned which one it is. He believes himself to be a raconteur.
You keep engaging people in conversation, and maybe you a couple of times interrupt someone, so you commit a couple of minor social faux pas, but it's nonetheless effective. So Sing and Dietrich both do talk a lot, and they speak to you, and maybe even sometimes the Reverend is kind of dragged, not necessarily kicking and screaming, but certainly unwilling into the conversation. Sing explains that he was a medic in the East India Company. Would you be at all curious about that? You know, the East India Company is a merchant endeavor. You do not know why they would need specifically a combat medic. Would you at all inquire about that?
Yes, but this is also tricky because I think a big part of Winchell's whole deal is trading on Orientalism. And so sure. He's probably made a lot of claims about having been to India and knowing people in India.
Yeah.
And he has to keep fighting the urge to get into a familiar lie. While this is going on, it's like, yes, India. I remember once when I was talking to the Pashmina of Shah.
Sure. Well, I'd say that despite the fact that you failed the check, I would say that that is such a massive blunder in the conversation that you would only make that if you say that you do that. You do not, even though you failed the role, you do not necessarily be like, yes, these people you're talking about, I know them well.
He keeps checking himself.
Yeah. So, well, if you inquire at all, you find out that the East India Company had a standing army, which shocks you a little bit. But apparently they were there for defensive actions only. Although Dr. Singh gives the kind of a similar eye roll when he's explaining that. And you get the impression that the East India Company was no good. But he explains that the East India Company, or becoming a medic there, was the easiest way for him to become a doctor, or at least maybe for him the only way to become a doctor. And he has served his time, is very glad to be out, and now is trying to set up a practice here in the States. His family are currently in Boston, and he is traveling to Boston to see them again. You also learn that Frieda Dietrich is here to attend her husband's funeral.
Ah. So she's available.
her husband was a U.S. senator, but he unfortunately died of she just calls it a mystery illness and doesn't elaborate any further, even if pressed. Would you at all, are you interested in Frieda Dietrich, or was that just a joke?
I don't know. I know I was able to hold her gaze when she tried to intimidate me before.
Yeah. Yes, you were.
No, let's just keep it. Let's keep it rolling.
Both of you notice, or both of you in conversation, she's like, you find out she has been married 3 times, and all 3 of her husbands have died in mysterious circumstances. 2 of them via a mystery illness. She refuses to elaborate. And 1 of them, "fell."
Tragic.
And you get to make of that what you currently are making of that.
My condolences.
Picking up a cocktail that she has been sipping from, she says, "Thank you. I am, I grieve for them every day." And she takes a big swig.
If you wish at all to contact them, my services are available.
Setting the glass down, she says, "I would not do that. I love having the last word."
Damn.
That's very good. That's very good.
Well, dinner begins to wind down, and some people move to the second dining car, presumably for an aperitif or a smoke. But a lot of people are going to bed. Would either of you want to join people in the second dining car, or would you like to head to your room and retire?
I think I've picked up that the Rev has kind of cooled a little bit over the course of the evening.
Sure.
So, Reverend, could I interest you in a cup of tea before bed?
Sure, I'll go with a cup of tea. Coffee's usually my thing, but tea I'll give a shot.
I don't know how you could drink coffee this late in the day. I would be up all night and into the next day.
Oh, there's a lot of late shifts in my past, so
You know, you do what you have to do. Decaf is also an option, so. I'll go with tea, though, whichever one you're having, sure.
Oh, no, 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 no. This is America. Coffee it is.
All right.
Good. A nice steaming hot cup of decaf coffee before bed.
Which would not be invented for 39 more years.
John Decaf of Decaf Labs in Cambridge.
We're reading the same article, Adam.
Yeah. We're reading the same article. Yeah, John Decaf manages to invent it 6 years before this. It's a new and exciting product. You go to... Oh, would you like to stay in this? This car is kind of emptying out, so if you wanted to be alone, you could be here, or you could move to the other dining car and still be around some people. It's up to you.
I'm fine being here if you want.
Yeah, no, here's good. Here's good.
The only company that... Obviously, of course, you're allowed to stay here and just have a cup of coffee or whatever, but you do see that several of the wait staff are kind of clearing away all the tables and making this place nice and neat again. They obviously, you know, don't touch your table at all, unless you maybe ask for them, but they just clean around you and give you some space and privacy. Yeah. It would be Miguel himself who brings out both of your... You're both having a coffee, right? Just one of you is decaf?
Yeah.
Yep.
Miguel brings out both of your coffees, sets them down in front of you, and says, "I hope you have a lovely evening. Thank you for traveling with the Cran," he says. And then he leaves.
Well, thank you very much, Miguel.
I say, now, normally I'm not one to let the side down, but between you and me, you know, the whole thing is a bit of an act. Got quite lucky with Elizabeth there. Turns out if you shake any landed English family, at least a handful of Elizabeths will tumble out of it.
I would like to gauge if he is lying.
Reverend, Edwards's face is inscrutable to you. You are unable to deduce whether or not he was lying just then.
Well, whether or not it's an act or... I don't even want to suggest it's something you can do. There's a lot of things the Bible says about people like you, and I don't want to, you know, group you all in a one bit. Because a lot of the things in the Bible talk about very different sides of the same coin. Like Philippians 4:13, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. It doesn't give any limitations of what you can do. But at the same time, in Leviticus 26, if a person turns to mediums and necromancers whoring after them, I will set my face against that person and will cut him off from among his people. Even though you can do all things, doesn't mean that you should. So... whether or not it's an act or something you can actually do, it really hit that person in a very rough spot.
Yes, perhaps I should smooth things over. Incidentally, I'm quite a few of the people like you in the Bible. I wonder which group you're referring to.
I was particularly referring to mediums. It refers to mediums specifically in Leviticus 19:31. Do not turn to mediums or necromancers. Do not seek them out. And so make yourself unclean by them. So mediums are you, sorcerers are potentially it because they didn't know the difference of what was what. A lot of things, if they couldn't make sense of it, it's magic. It's sorcery. It's the devil. And, you know, we've answered some of those things. This particular thing, not so much, because the dead do not praise the Lord, nor do any who go down into silence. Psalm 115:17. There's a lot that's said about what you do.
Primarily what I do, I'm an entertainer.
What drives you to do it?
I need to make a living. And who can resist the lure of the stage? There's something about transporting people, even briefly, to some place where anything could be possible, and being the one who brings them there, can be intoxicating.
That's an interesting way to phrase it, because I would phrase what I do in a similar fashion, just less of a stage and more about bringing people to a place that only their imagination can usually bring them.
Yes, but you've been called. You're bringing them truth. I'm bringing them a nickel's worth of entertainment and making it seem like a dollar.
But see, you try to tap into people's inner thoughts, their past, their happiness or misery. I can imagine some of these end in people leaving happily, going, thank you so much for contacting, you know, great grandma for me. I miss her very much. And then some other people will storm out of the room just like he did. So when it comes to things like that, what do you really get out of it?
You know, I've never considered beyond coming up as I did, not terribly well off, needing to make ends meet however you could, you know. Learn a bunch of tricks on the street as a child, how to trick people, three-card Monty, that kind of thing, then sort of spin it out into a grander scheme. And if it brings some people peace, then all the better. And if some people are upset or frightened, well, I hope that they can. How did the bard put it? We are but players passing upon a stage, and if perchance we do offend, you know, all that. What was the question?
What do you get out of it?
As I said, it's a job.
Everyone's, of course, open to their own path in front of them. I'm sometimes curious what drives some people to do particular things. You hear a lot of good and a lot of bad in what I do. Confession, as much as we don't do confessions as, you know, Catholicism and such in the Methodist Church, people still like to go to us and unload their problems. So you get to hear a lot of bad and good. I just hope that you have a lot more good on your side from what you do than bad.
I like to think so. Anyway, is it just me or is this coffee absolutely terrible?
It's awful. It is one of the worst things I think I've ever had. This decaf fella didn't know what he was doing.
Cheers.